And welcome back, everybody, to today's Brexit podcast. And today we're going to have a look at the fashion industry. It's not something in 116 episodes we've yet touched on as far as Brexit is concerned, but long overdue. And my guest on today's show is Tamara Jinjic. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yeah.
Who is an expert in the fashion industry. She's going to tell us exactly what she does, but also why it's such a vital cog in the UK economy. It doesn't just look nice, does it? So can you give us a bit of background first, I think, please, Tamara?
So on the fashion industry, as it stands, it employs over 880,000 people in the UK. It makes over 28 billion for the UK annually. So it's the highest earning sector inside the creative industries. It outstrips all of them. And the creative sector, I think, is second to the financial services in terms of the money that it generates for the UK.
So it plays a very important role. And what's your specific interest with it? What role do you fulfill?
So I come from the fashion industry. I've worked within the fashion industry for almost 20 years. And then last year, after going on a mentoring scheme to support women from different backgrounds going into frontline politics, I was offered a role in Westminster by my mentor, who is called Sharon Hodgson MP. And I worked for her, and it was whilst I was there working for her on primarily her art, craft and design and educational party group. It became apparent to me, going to lots of meetings, especially around Brexit, which obviously from a fashion perspective I was fascinated by and concerned by, it was very apparent that there wasn't enough advocacy and lobbying going on. So I organised some roundtables in Westminster, and therefore now I'm working on the launch, which launches on the 21st of November, a fashion roundtable to support that work.
Okay, and what was some of your feedback then when you started with these roundtables? What was the response?
Okay, so basically, imagine how you felt on June the 24th. It was like a room full of very well-dressed people who suddenly had a chance to express their concerns. The industry voted 95% Remain. I only know one person within the industry personally who voted to leave, who's been candid enough and honest enough to discuss their politics. And the reasons that I wanted to do that is I very much believe that we all have to communicate and intersect. And what I was seeing on my social media and at every meeting I went to with every press office or engagement with people within the industry was a high degree of concern. But those people didn't have the access that I had to politicians, and I felt that it was a duty to help support them get across their concerns, and so that they can express their worries to their MPs.
Okay, so we'll move on to the concerns in one second. But can you give us your view on why it was such a high proportion of Remainers? So, you know, the general vote in the British UK public was 52% to leave, 48% to remain. Mm. So the fashion industry hugely skewed towards Remainers.
Yes, I don't think there would have been an EU referendum if it had been made up of the fashion industry, that's for sure. A lot of us are freelance, and we've had to travel for work, or we've come in and out of different countries either for work or for education. The UK fashion colleges and art colleges are some of the best in the world, and there's a high proportion of international students, many of whom either stay here or relocate to other parts of the world, but with that reputation from our fashion colleges. So there's one aspect of that. Quite often you can be travelling backwards and forwards to Paris or to New York for work. Those two, I would say, primarily. And then also I've worked all around the world. So it's been a very international and fluid industry. The components in the more manufacturing and retail side of it, from pattern cutting to fabrication and materials, one garment could be going through 18 countries to get to delivery to retail. So inevitably, anything which would impinge upon that and make delivery of either goods or services delayed or impacted or reduced is going to impact on the profit margin. So no one's going to vote for that, especially if you're a freelancer and you're reliant on the whims of the market.
Do you think all of these concerns were really evident from the outset, or has it become, some of the fears become even more starker as we've moved forward with the process?
I think the industry was concerned. I think, unfortunately for some, they might not have been as aware as someone like me, who was already doing work around campaigning on Brexit. So I think that people might not have thought it was going to happen because they were in such a world of remainers. And that's from all income backgrounds. That's not just, you know, I think there can be a projection that people in the fashion industry are all very wealthy. That's definitely not always the case. You know, you've got seamstresses who are on under, you know, between 20 and 30,000 a year, and you've got, you know, freelance stylists and photographers starting out who really aren't earning very much. But I think that it's not an industry that's overtly political. It can be very single issue orientated, again, because of the nature of the freelance industry and not wanting to speak out about different issues, perhaps. I don't know. I'm just guessing. And so I don't think people thought it was going to happen because it was so clearly not something that people in our industry wanted, that I think they thought that everybody felt like that.
Yeah, it's a good point. On specific concerns, you said there that you know, this is what you do now. You have access to politicians, so you are lobbying the cause. Many other industries, of course, want their say on Brexit too, and there's a huge amount of noise around Brexit. It's really the top of everyone's agenda right now. So it's important that you can make your voice heard. Does that mean that you hone in on a specific concern? And if so, what would that be right now?
Well, I mean, we're launching the business next month, so we're consolidating our timeline for going forwards off my own work in the time that I was in Westminster and since setting up Fashion Roundtable. I've been working with either other arts groups, such as campaigning around the EBAC for the Future campaign, which has been set up to support adding arts back into the education system. And the part of that actually ties in with Brexit, because we're seeing a 16% reduction in GCSE art and design uptake in the last 2 years. So if immigration is going to be one of the key factors, you have to build up the domicile talent. And it seems completely nonsensical to me to, at the same time as advocating potentially a reduction in immigration numbers, you don't then support the creative sector by educating the talent of the future. So that's one issue.
Yeah.
And then there's many others.
I was looking through some of the government papers on the fashion industry in regards to Brexit. The subject of intellectual property rights came up.
Yes.
And the potential threat to them. Could you just take listeners through what that might be? I guess maybe you have to start with some brass tacks on what intellectual property rights really are.
So my understanding of intellectual property rights is who owns either the rights to the design or to the image. And obviously at the moment that's covered under EU law. And there are concerns that if we leave without a transparent deal between us and the EU, we could be flooded with poor copies from not just the EU but from other countries of work which is domiciled to the UK. I think that's how I would put it.
Yeah, so some of the EU law protects yes. the fashion industry in that sense at
yes.
the moment. And in terms of being a key exporter for the UK, figures that 74% of our fashion industry exports go to the European Union.
Yeah, I think we're their highest local importer. So, you know, it's a coalescing industry, so it's very fluid. I mean, anybody from any part of the industry knows what time the Eurostar's running, and, you know, whether it's to deal with product or to deal with going for a shoot. You know, it's that fluid.
And in one of the papers that I looked at, it said that increasing trade with China, India, Vietnam and Bangladesh could be important. Do you think that's real realistic, and maybe that would pertain more to imports than exports?
I know that the forecasts are for growth in those areas, and I think it's important to look at alternative trade all the time. But my feeling is that, you know, there are ecological concerns to wanting to primarily focus on a country and on regions which are much further away. We share a body size and we share a history with Europe, which means that the taste and the aesthetic of the clothes that we design is very much in line with theirs. So I think that's one factor. And then there's also, you know, issues around domicile talent growing up in China. They are absolutely flooding money into their arts education. And although at the moment it's the Chinese consumer who is boosting the UK retail figures, and it is the Chinese student who is boosting the education in fashion colleges figures, I personally don't think that's something that you can rely on in the future. I don't think you can rely on anything. You always have to be strategic. I mean, fashion, if it's anything, is about being strategic and trying to be one step ahead and create the covetable. And obviously our colleges and our retail spaces are fantastic, but you can't. I don't think you can rely on something and rest on your laurels. I think you have to be aware that whilst we're encouraging and nurturing that, we also have to look to what they're doing in their own countries. And if they're boosting their own domicile talent, then on our, you know, at our peril, do we rely on just being fabulous and cool?
Now we've triggered Article 50, but we haven't officially left the European Union yet. Have you already seen some changes in the industry as a whole? Are you seeing brands potentially pulling out?
There's taxation, which people are off the record admitting has relocated. There are people who are very open to the golden passport offers being made from alternative countries, such as Portugal has been making a 10-year tax-free offer to business, which obviously they've got the manufacturing outside of Lisbon. It's a great quality of life. It's inside the EU. They inevitably want to boost their own economy and their own profile. There are people who've already moved their taxation out. So they might have an office here, but their taxation might not be here.
Yeah. And so, and can you put forward, I guess, a best case scenario for the UK fashion industry going forward to try and maybe persuade our talent not to relocate and say that actually it can be okay? What would be your hope?
My wish would be that there was a much more holistic, joined up approach between the different government bodies, so that education fed into DCMS and fed into trade in a more fluid way, so that, you know, instead of them pushing STEM education, they understood the need for STEAM, because I think it starts there. If you don't have children educated in the arts, you don't have a consumer that's, you know, engaged with all the various arts, who doesn't go to the museums as regularly, because it's irrelevant to them. It's a voyeur experience rather than something that they feel a part of. So I think that there has to be more joined up thinking. I think we need to have a more aligned approach towards, again, a similar feeling that I sometimes had speaking to colleges, that the government needs to understand that resting on being cool is really, you know, I don't think they think they're cool, but I think they think London's a great metropolis and a very exciting city, but all cities have a lifespan. And I don't think that you can just rely on that, because we heard today that the Bank of England are worried that we could lose 70,000 workers from the financial services. And if that's the high-end earners, you know, there goes your consumer. That's a big worry.
Yeah. And so if people are listening to you today want to show their support, want to get involved in what you're doing,
great.
Yeah. And how do they do it?
Well, we've launched the survey, the pre-launch survey, on our website, which is fashionroundtable.co.uk. And that's really to get feedback on the issues which are affecting the industry and the sector. And then from that, we launch next month on the 21st, and then we're launching with a campaign. and a series of roundtables. So that's really what they could do to just answer the questions that might, you know, we've covered a wide range of things from Brexit, but also education, retail, lots of different components of issues affecting the industry. And I think they are escalated by Brexit. But also, going back to what would be solutions, we've got lots of empty retail spaces all around the country. We've got charity shops flooding our high streets. It's a shame that we're not doing some joined-up thinking about supporting graduates and startups with some offers which could regenerate the high street, and they could afford, because obviously the rates went up last year and earlier this year, and it impacts on what's happening on our high street, which means that the consumer offer is diminished and becomes much more of a generic multinational rather than local.
Yeah, I think high streets is probably an area that we could discuss for quite some time. And
yeah.
Even I was listening to even Breaking News this morning and on the betting industry, and to discuss the merits of the betting industry. But I was quite, maybe if I thought, I wouldn't be that surprised, but it's quite shocking to hear that many high streets kind of only survive on the fact that there are bookies on the corners, and the tax that they pay actually kind of makes the whole high street thrive. So
yeah,
it's the right wrongs of all of this. But yeah, certainly there needs to be, as you say, regeneration and growth and kind of try and help them thrive. Tamara, thank you ever so much.
You're really welcome.
To join us. I really, really appreciate you having you on the podcast.
I mean, one thing I'd like to just add is, I get it, is people can think that fashion is this very otherworldly, aspirational, fluffy world. And it can be, don't get me wrong, that's what those catwalk events can look like, but there's an awful lot of work that goes into that, and there is a big industry, and growth has gone from 6% annually before the EU referendum was called to 1.2% last year. That's a lot of reduction, you know, that's a 4.8% reduction in growth. And the concern would be, when you talked about IP earlier, is, you know, we could have growth, but it could be the wrong kind of growth. So there's lots of different factors that we just have to be hyper alert to, I think, to support an industry that can be exciting but also sustainable.